Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody out there had a great weekend. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday. Broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Parker, bye week. How'd you enjoy it?
It was great because I didn't have to suffer. I got to enjoy my college football Saturday, got to chill with some red zone on Sunday, and didn't have to worry about a loss.
Yes,
so
it
was great.
I did the same thing, and it was awesome to watch yesterday and feel like the Titans won the bye week. Everything that the Titans probably wanted to happen ended up working out, except for the Giants blew a 10-point lead late against the Bears. That would have helped out the Titans' draft pick hopes. But anyway, we'll get into that later on. Saturday was an important day of college football. Lots of close calls for teams in college football playoff contention, including Vanderbilt. The Commodores taking on Auburn at home. And man, what a game again. That's now three straight for Vanderbilt that have just come down to the wire in the weirdest way possible. You look back 2 weeks ago, Missouri coming up 3 inches short on a Hail Mary. Vandy erasing a 24-point fourth-quarter deficit against Texas. Almost erasing, I should say. And almost recovering an onside kick to give them a chance to tie or win the game. And then this week, Auburn firing Hugh Freeze and clearly got the interim coach bump. The offense looked way better than anything we've seen from Auburn all year long. And Vandy got punched in the mouth. It was 17-3 early on in that game, and the Commodores found a way to get back into it, take a lead late, almost gave that up too. They were up 38-30, ended up getting tied at 38 thanks to just some spectacular plays from Cam Coleman. I do want to, quick sidebar, that dude is going to be a great player on Sundays. The touchdown catch, bobbling it and reeling it in with one hand, followed by another one-handed catch in the same spot in the end zone for the two-point conversion. You knew where the ball was going almost on every play, and you still couldn't stop it because he was that good. Although the same thing did happen in overtime. Vandy went down and scored to open the overtime period, made it 45-38, and then on fourth down, you knew it was going to number eight. C.J. Hurd bails out and double teams Coleman in the end zone. It's incomplete, and Vanderbilt gets the win. What a game on Saturday. And Vandy, just by the skin of their teeth, able to escape and keep their college football playoff hopes alive.
I feel like we had a pretty good read on that game because Auburn's coming in 4-5. They just fired their head coach in Hugh Freeze, and they have such a talented roster that the 4-5 record, if you're just looking at it, that it doesn't indicate. And Cam Coleman was unleashed. We've all kind of known about Cam Coleman, but that was kind of his coming out party because, oh my gosh, just circus catch after circus catch. If you want to talk about drafts, 2027 is going to be a loaded year for receivers because you'll have Jeremiah Smith, you'll have Cam Coleman, you'll have Ryan Williams, and probably some of the Clemson receivers as well coming out. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, next year, if you need a receiver, that's the draft to find one because there are plenty of elite guys coming out. This year, there's a good group too. We've gone through the top guys, Jordan Tyson from Arizona State, Carnell Tate from Ohio State, Jeremy Bernard, Alabama, the list goes on. But yeah, the Maseratis are waiting in the garage for 2027 with Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams, and Cam Coleman, who, again, was just awesome. And you mentioned that Auburn team, there's going to be a lot of conversation of, well, it was an overtime win against an Auburn team that wasn't very good, and that Auburn team put up 3 points against Kentucky the week before. I think you could clearly see that that team maybe needed a change at the top because not only was Hugh Freeze your head coach, Hugh Freeze was calling the plays, and that offense was anemic through the first 9 games of the year. And then they come out and drop 38. Now, Vandy's defense, I think there is a little bit of concern there. Texas's offense had struggled all year. They put up 34 on you. Auburn's offense had struggled all year. They put up 38 on you. You can't be the get-right game for these teams' offenses that have struggled throughout the year. But I think you could also see that that offense had new life. Ashton Daniels was making plays with his legs, and there was a much better flow to that offense than what we've seen from Auburn all season long under Hugh Freeze.
I try to watch it because, again, I've never called plays in college. I've never called plays in the NFL, so I try to watch it when I criticize play calling, but there were several things. Hugh Freeze, his biggest problem at Auburn was he was never able to get quarterback right. But a second, not too far behind that, was he wasn't putting his athletes in best positions for them to be successful. So with a guy with Ashton Daniels coming over from Stanford, there was a lot of things that he did with him and Jackson Arnold that just didn't make sense. So I feel like they did get a bump in that way with the new play caller, where we got to see an Auburn offense that we hadn't seen at all under Hugh Freeze. So, again, you're going to look at this and the casual fan will say, well, you went to overtime with a 4-5 Auburn team. Well, what just happened with Indiana and Penn State?
Right.
That game came down to the wire. A team that's lost 6 straight, they fired their head coach as well.
Yep.
It's college football.
Look at Oregon and Iowa. I mean, Iowa's always going to drag you into the mud, and it's going to be a rock fight. That is how Iowa plays. But Oregon, you lose that game, all of a sudden – 3 Big Ten teams is no longer a lock, right? Like, Ohio State and Indiana, they're going to be in. I don't see many games the rest of the way to worry about. And even if they lost a game, they'd be fine. But a 2-loss Oregon, if you start comparing resumes of a 2-loss Oregon and some of the 2-loss SEC teams, maybe a 2-loss Notre Dame who could be on the bubble at the end of the year, like, Oregon may not end up on the right side of that. Their best win would be Penn State, right?
Yeah, either that or Iowa. I'd probably say the Iowa win.
Well, right. I'm saying if they had lost to Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Your best win would be Penn State, and you'd have 2 losses, yes, both against ranked teams. But I think you start to question whether Oregon would end up in the playoff at the end of the year. They were able to escape. Did you watch the end of game day on Saturday, Parker?
Yeah, I did.
Do you see what Kirk Herbstreit said? He almost guessed it.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think it was 18.
He said
16.
He said 16-15 was his final score. He said Iowa's going to win 16-15, and Oregon kicks the field goal to win it.
He was close.
18-16. He almost had it exactly.
I actually watched the entirety of that football game, and I was just mesmerized by how bad Iowa's offense was until late, because it was like they forbid themselves from getting more than 3 yards a play, and it was just. It was just, oh my gosh, it was so depressing to watch. But they turned it on the last 2 minutes. I don't know.
That's Iowa football for you. The Hawkeyes almost were able to pull off the upset. But you are right making the point that there are plenty of close calls around the league. They don't ask you how. They ask you how many wins. And Vanderbilt was able to escape with that win against Auburn, showed a lot of grit, a lot of resilience after falling behind early in that game. Do want to say, though, Auburn also did not go away. Like, it's easy for that team, Auburn. Yeah, you got out to an early lead, but Vandy came back. You get the wide-open touchdown to Trey Richardson, and Vandy gets right back in the game. They take a 31-24 lead. 31-24 at one point. And 31-23, I should say. I'm going back in my head. But that team did not fold. Auburn kept coming back, kept throwing punches, and got that game to overtime, nearly won it in regulation, and we'll get into the final sequence there of the fourth quarter coming up in the next segment, but that's an Auburn team that kept on fighting, and I think you really saw, we talk about the interim coach bump all the time, the Titans clearly didn't get it under Mike McCoy, but it does happen when a team maybe just needed a change of a voice in that locker room. I think Hugh Freeze's message probably got stale. I think there was a feeling that he was on their way out. And DJ Durkin clearly got the most out of his team on Saturday.
Yeah, the guys looked like they really wanted to play for DJ Durkin. Did you hear what he had to say after the game about the transfer portal and other schools are going to come for his players? Did you see that?
I did not see that, actually.
Well, he said that after the game. I thought he was very candid about it. But it just seemed like his team really wanted to win that game. Like, they showed no fight, and that's the thing that drives me crazy when people say, once you're out of the playoffs, what do you have to play for? They had something to play for.
Yeah, they played with pride. And it started from even before the opening kickoff. I don't know if they showed on TV the scuffle and the coin toss, But I was doing sideline for the Vandy radio crew, and part of my responsibilities is go out and put the mic in front of the head referee during the coin toss so we can get what happens. And I had to bail out of there before he was done announcing what had happened because Keldrick Falk was going after the Vandy captains, and the Vandy bench erupts and is coming off the sideline. It was Auburn came to play. And they were getting chippy before the game even started. They were offsetting unsportsmanlike conducts. They got thrown from there. But, man, it was a very interesting game. And Vanderbilt, I think, feels fortunate to get out of there with a 45-38 win in overtime. Clark Lee even said in his postgame press conference, he said, that is not how I thought that game was going to go. But a win is a win. And you head into the bye week 8-2. You'll try and reset for Kentucky and Tennessee down the stretch. Plenty more to get to on that game. I want to go back to that final sequence at the end of regulation, which almost cost Vanderbilt the game. We'll talk about that coming up next. Also, a couple of officiating quirks in that game that I wanted to talk about. We'll get to that as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to text or call. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll also talk Titans later on in the show coming out of the bye week. And they got some help in terms of the draft positioning yesterday. Saints, Jets, Dolphins all get wins and helping the Titans move into sole possession of the first overall pick halfway through the year. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday morning. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Mondays were made for Masero. Big screens, bold flavors, and all the football action. From queso to kickoffs, this is how Masero does game night. Masero Football Mondays in 12 South. Don't miss a snap. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Coming off the Titans bye week, so we'll get into the two-tone blue later in this show. The big game this weekend in Nashville, Vanderbilt escaping in overtime against Auburn, 45-38 to get to 8-2 on the year and head into the bye week with their college football playoff hopes still alive. The end of that game, regulation, I should say, was interesting. Clark Lee has his team 4th-and-1 in field goal range. Auburn out of timeouts with about 1:10 left. Parker, in that moment, what were your thoughts? Did you think send the field goal unit out, make it a 3-point game, and hope you can hold Auburn? Or were you thinking go for it like Clark Lee ended up doing?
Well, when you have a guy like Diego Pavia, I'm a big fan of feel of the game over analytics. I think analytics are important sometimes, but sometimes you just have a certain feel as a coach, and you got to go with your gut on that. When you have a guy like Diego Pavia, I'm going for the win. I'm going to end it.
I was with you. Sitting there watching the game, I was thinking go for it there. First off, yes, you have Diego Pavia, who's proven that he can make plays in the clutch time. You look back, that was 4th-and-1. 4th-and-1's gone pretty well for Diego Pavia over the last couple of years. The Alabama one last year, the touchdown deep to Junior Sherrill, and then the 4th-and-1 play against LSU where he spun out of a tackle, got the play down the sideline, helped win that game. I like the idea of going for it. Also because the defense had struggled, right? Like, Cam Coleman had just mossed a cornerback on back-to-back plays to tie the game at 38. If you kick that field goal and they get the ball at the 25, all it takes is one heave downfield to Cam Coleman and an unbelievable catch, and you might lose that game in regulation. So I like the idea to go for it. You could have run the clock down, sent Brock Taylor out to kick the field goal and win the game. I didn't love the play call. Diego Pavia was the focal point of that defense. Like, all eyes were on Diego. I'm sure there was probably a message sent in from DJ Durkin to his team, do not let two beat you with his legs, right? If Eli Stowers, who was great, by the way, on Saturday, 12 catches for over 120 yards in that game, if Eli Stowers made a great catch and you get the first down, fine. But I'm sure there was a message of, hey, it's 4th-and-1. Do not let Pavia beat you with his legs. And the play call was an option. Pavia goes out to the left. He stumbles. The turf monster kind of got him a little bit, and he goes down. I didn't love the play call, but I did like the idea. You trust your offense that had been great all day. Your defense had struggled, and luckily, your defense was able to hold up and get that game to overtime. But I thought that was an interesting call, but I thought it was the right one to go for it there. Trust your offense to go get you 1 yard. But it did pop into my mind. I understand Diego Pavia isn't the biggest guy, but I hate going, and he doesn't take snaps under center at all, I don't believe. At least I can't remember the last time I saw him take a snap under center.
It's been a while.
But I always hate fourth and one in shotgun. I do. And I started to think, I'm like, man, Eli Stowers was a high school quarterback. That dude's massive. Like, rep it and practice a little bit and have Stowers go do a tush-push, and you're probably going to get that 1 yard 9 times out of 10. At least that was going through my mind. I'm like, hey, you've got a big guy, Eli Stowers, who at the very least has played quarterback before. He was a high school quarterback. I believe he went to college as a quarterback. Rep it and practice a while. Let him take snaps under center and see if he can just muscle his way forward for a yard.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Again, we both agree with the call to go for it on fourth and one. Now, the play call, that gets a little, sure, maybe they could have run something different. I'd actually love to ask Clark Lee about that on Wednesday, get his thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I agree. This being in the shotgun on fourth and one, it's so weird because sometimes, too, if you're running the ball on fourth and one and you have your running back offset, it would make more sense for them to go in the pistol. That way they have momentum going downfield.
Right.
Whereas if they're starting offset, they don't have any momentum. They have to go sideways to get the snap and then get going downfield. So I get the sentiment on that.
Yeah, I hate shotgun on fourth and short. I understand that's the offense for the Commodores, is they're in the pistol, they're in the shotgun, there's no in between. But I would rather the ball just start as close to the line to gain as you possibly can, and that play obviously didn't end up working out for Vanderbilt, but they do get the win, 45-38. Nice little jump pass from Diego Pavia to Cole Spence in overtime, and
very Tebow-esque,
right? And Pavia, he just kept on making plays. Like, that was maybe one of his best games in black and gold. And he is the kind of player who can give you exactly what you need in a certain game. Like Missouri a couple weeks ago. He didn't play great statistically, but down the stretch when you needed him to extend plays, you needed him to extend drives and get into the end zone one final time to make it 17-10 and win that football game, he was able to do it for you. He was 10 of 19 for 129 yards passing and one interception in that game, but he made enough plays to get you a 7-point win. This week against Auburn, they needed him more. The run game wasn't as effective as it typically is for Vanderbilt. They had to win through the air. He goes 75% completion percentage, 377 yards, 3 touchdowns through the air, 112 yards rushing, and a touchdown on the ground as well. I mean, the running backs are crucial to this Vanderbilt offense. Auburn shut it down for the most part, and Diego Pavia took matters into his own hands and had his best game of the season. I don't think he's going to win the Heisman. I think the group at the top has kind of started to separate itself with Julian Sain at Ohio State, Fernando Mendoza, Indiana, Ty Simpson, Alabama. Those guys are going to be the top three, but I don't know. I have a hard time believing anyone else is right behind him other than Diego Pavia. And if they invite 4 or 5 finalists to New York, I think Diego Pavia ends up in one of those seats if he finishes this season strong. I don't think he's going to win it, barring just some ridiculous performances over the next 2 weeks against Kentucky and Tennessee. But I think he deserves to be in the conversation to at least have a seat in New York. And for Vanderbilt, like, yeah, you don't want to take moral victories, but getting a Heisman finalist at Vanderbilt is something that I don't think that Vanderbilt fans had even thought about in a very long time, if ever. And Diego should be right in that conversation with the performance that he had this week. I mean, over the last 2 weeks, he's got over 700 yards passing on over 70% completion, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions, 150 yards rushing, and 2 touchdowns.
Against SEC opponents, nonetheless, who I've heard people say he hadn't thrown for 200 yards against an SEC opponent yet, and he's done it over that in back-to-back weeks. But I hear so many people outside of the Vanderbilt fan base trying to dunk on Vanderbilt. Like, I've talked with my friends in Chicago. I've talked with friends who are Tennessee fans trying to dunk on Diego. And I'm like, Don't you understand that we're talking about Vanderbilt in CFP contention? We're talking about a potential Heisman candidate at quarterback.
Right.
Again, this is Vanderbilt. We've never done that before.
And it's tough because the expectations keep getting raised. Like, I say it all the time. If you go back to August and just told Vanderbilt fans, you're going to win 8 games this year, I think all of them would have signed up for it. But right now you're 8-2 and nobody's satisfied because you've still got business to take care of and a chance to get into the college football playoff. It's the bar being raised this high for Clark Lee and this team, who lost 10 straight games 2 seasons ago, it's crazy. But that's exactly what Clark Lee wants for his program, is he wants the high expectations because he believes that's where this program can go. Cameron on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, dude, they were on the 25-yard line. That was a terrible call to go for it. That's easy field goal range. But Cameron, you get 1 yard, you can run the clock down, and Auburn doesn't get a chance to go tie it up. That was the thinking there. It wasn't about can they make the field goal. It was about trying to end the game right there and not give Auburn's offense, which had been explosive in that game, a chance to go down and tie it and send it to overtime or win it. That was the thinking from Clark Lee, was if I can get 1 yard, we can kick the field goal with zeros on the clock instead of giving it back to them with a minute and a chance to go right down the field as they had a couple of minutes ago to tie the game at 38. So I like the call to go for it. I wish they had a better play call for it. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Plenty more on college football coming up. 6641, our good friend from Memphis, says, good morning, fellas. It's been an awful weekend. I felt 1,000 emotions over my beloved Memphis Tigers, and no one single emotion was anything good. Probably not bringing the Tigers back up on this show until basketball season.
Man, Tulane had tough their one. Way through yep. 3 quarters. Memphis made it a ball game late, and they had a chance to tie it up, but That fourth down fade from Brennan Lewis just didn't work out.
They did, yeah. And the American chaos is going on, but keep an eye on the Sun Belt. James Madison ranked in the AP poll yesterday. So we've been saying all year, because that's the way it's looked, that the American champion was going to be the Group of Five bid to the college football playoff, and it's still very possible with a lot of good teams in there like Tulane and USF and North Texas, but it's not quite as cut and dry as it was a couple of weeks ago. James Madison making a run there, and maybe they could end up being in the college football playoff. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. It was a crazy weekend of college football. Didn't get quite as many upsets as some of the previous weeks, but did get some and a lot of close calls. We'll go around college football and look at the college football playoff rankings as we'll get a new set tomorrow night as we head towards the middle of November. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. DVD with Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall today. Prior to the Monday Night Football game, tonight's matchup, Eagles and Packers. Good one tonight. We'll preview that one later on in the show. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. College football this weekend, a week of close calls. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Indiana barely escaping against Penn State. Oregon, a game-winning field goal late against Iowa to keep their loss column at just one. And the ACC gets beat up for the second straight week. If there were any doubts that the ACC is a one-bid league, I think those are over now. ACC, last week, Miami, Georgia Tech going down. This week, it's the top two ranked teams in the conference, Virginia and Louisville, who both lose to unranked opponents, Wake Forest and Cal. But let's start with that Indiana-Penn State game. I almost got it again, Parker. I almost did. My Monday headline was Penn State beating Indiana. Came up just short by a...
I was thinking about you during the game.
By a toenail, Indiana escapes. What a catch, by the way. What a catch in the back of the end zone. I don't know how he was able to get his foot back in play, because he was hovering out of bounds and somehow maneuvered his body back and almost got both feet down. Like, that was almost a catch on Sundays too. That was ridiculous. Nevada Josh even texted in earlier and said some amazing catches this weekend, both in the college and the pros. It was a great weekend for the receivers. That one was easily the best catch of the week, and Indiana escapes. They stay undefeated, not worried about Indiana getting into the playoff. Oregon escapes against Iowa. That one could have had an impact on the college football playoff picture. The one we talked about a lot on Friday, Parker, was Texas Tech and BYU. And Texas Tech took it to them. And you thought that that was what was going to happen. You said you thought Texas Tech not only won, but won by double digits. And that game was never really all that close. I want to ask the question about BYU. A one-loss BYU, can you leave them out of the playoff?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But here's the thing. They still have to play Cincinnati in a couple of weeks. So there might be another loss in there. Plus, what happens in the Big 12 championship? Are they going to make it? I don't know. So
yeah.
There's still plenty of chaos that can happen in November. But if it turns out that BYU is a one-loss team, then that means they win the Big 12. So I say no.
I meant,
are you saying before
I meant
the Big
11 12? And 2, yes. 11, okay, let's say they go to the Big 12 championship and lose again to Texas Tech.
It depends on what happens around them. I still think there are other teams that would get the – I think a 10-2 Vanderbilt might get the benefit of a doubt over BYU. I don't know.
Well, that's where I am because, you know, around here, that's the question is, if Vanderbilt wins their last two games, do they get in? And I still think you need a little bit of help. But it's not like it's everybody has to lose. You just need one or two teams to add an extra loss. Notre Dame would be the easiest one. If Notre Dame loses this weekend to Pitt, where game day is going, they're out. Notre Dame at three losses is not getting in. So that's what Vandy fans need to be looking for. And in fact, you look, there's a nice little watching schedule for Vanderbilt this weekend. We talked about the Titans winning the bye week with all of the teams in contention for the number one overall pick winning. Well, Vandy, let's see if we can win the bye week this week. At 11 a.m., you got Notre Dame and Pitt. Obvious rooting interest there is Pitt. If Notre Dame loses, they're out. Then you got Oklahoma and Alabama at 2:30. You want the Alabama Crimson Tide to win that game at home, get Oklahoma to three losses. And then in the late game, you've got Texas at Georgia. You need the Longhorns to lose that game to get their third loss and knock them out. If all three of those things happen, Vandy's in a great spot heading down the stretch. Odds are not all three of them are going to happen, but even if you get two, you feel a lot better about Vanderbilt's chances to get in at 10-2. So it's a big weekend. BYU is the interesting one for me now because the Big 12 looking more like a two-bid league, that Cincinnati game coming up in 2 weeks is the big one to keep an eye on. BYU got TCU and UCF at home in their other two games. Not impossible to lose those, but I'm not sure I would count on it. The win, I guess, that's holding BYU up is going to be that Utah win in the Holy War. Like, but outside of that, there's not really an impressive win on this schedule. I mean, here are the other wins for BYU. Portland State, Stanford, ECU, who I guess is fine in the American, Colorado, West Virginia, Arizona, Iowa State. Like, The resume isn't great, but they do have a good win against Utah. If they beat Cincinnati, that would be two. That one would be the one that I think keeps the committee up at night, is if it comes down to a fifth SEC team or an 11-2 BYU, who gets in? And again, we've talked about they don't want to punish teams for losing in their conference championship. So That might be the one that keeps the committee up at night late, is if it comes down to, let's say, a 10-2 Vanderbilt or a 10-2 Texas versus an 11-2 BYU who lost in the conference championship. I don't know which way they would lean.
Yeah, and that's the thing with BYU. It was so tough to get a read on them before that Utah game, and I'm really interested to see what the playoff committee does tomorrow night with Utah and BYU, because BYU has the head-to-head, but Utah is ranked 13th. So they're kind of telling you what they think about the Big 12, where there are three legit teams in contention for the playoff in that conference. But again, man, November is a crazy month, and it is a long year for some of these teams that are on the cusp of the playoff. We see that with ACC. We saw that with Virginia and Louisville and teams like that. They're so close to the playoff, but the air starts to get a little bit tighter once you get to November. And can you maintain that same success that you had in the first 3 months of the year?
Yeah, that's the big question, is can you just take care of your own business? And you look at these games and say, oh, this team should win that one, and this team should win in against Cal, and Louisville should win again. Or excuse me, they were against Cal. UVA should win against Wake Forest, but they didn't. And that opens the door for teams like Vanderbilt to make their way into the playoff if they can win their last couple of games. Now, Vandy has to take care of business, too. Auburn nearly beat them, which would have ended any hope at a college football playoff spot. Kentucky, man, did Kentucky look good against Florida this past weekend? So, Vandy coming off the bye in a couple of weeks, going to have to be able to beat Kentucky, which they'll be favored in that game. But nothing's given to you, especially in the SEC. If Vandy can get to 9-2, you head to Knoxville with a chance to get yourself into the playoff. The college football playoff rankings tomorrow are going to be very interesting because you look at Indiana at the top. Do they slide a little bit? Maybe Texas A&M bumps up to number two in the country after a pretty impressive win against Missouri, albeit with the backup quarterback for the Tigers. How far does Oregon fall? Do you maybe see Oregon drop a couple of spots after fighting against Iowa? I don't know. I wouldn't think so. How far does Vanderbilt rise? Vandy was right behind Louisville and Virginia. I'd guess they move past them. Does Vanderbilt pass BYU, who's 8-1? I think that's what you have to look at right now, is the resumes aren't going to change a ton for BYU down the stretch. Vanderbilt could get an impressive win on the road against Tennessee, who might still be ranked. If Vanderbilt's ahead of BYU this week, that's a precedent that you set moving forward. There's so much to be sorted out down the stretch in the college football season. I'm excited to see how this week turns out. Because again, for Vanderbilt fans, if you want to win the bye week, just like the Titans did this week, and I know Joe Rexroad might be punching air with me saying bye week over and over. I did hear Clark Lee say bye week, not open week.
Why, does Joe not like the term bye week?
He doesn't. He said it's an open week or idle.
Okay.
I mean, I get
it. Did he explain why he hates that term?
A bye, I guess, is technically you're advancing in a round of the, like, you're advancing. Right? And then idle or open just means you're off. I don't know. We'll need Joe to explain it. But
okay.
There is some sort of pet peeve with saying bye week. I did hear Clark Lee say it this weekend, though, so I'm going to stick with Clark. The bye week, if Vandy wants to win, you've got three games. You can park on your couch and watch all of them and have a significant rooting interest in all of them because legitimately, every win you get knocks a team out in front of you with Notre Dame, Texas, Oklahoma. Those are the three teams that are currently holding, or they'll be close to holding spots that you need to pass to get into the college football playoff. All three of them are playing ranked games this weekend. Notre Dame against Pitt. I think the Irish are going to be favored in that one. But then you got Texas and Oklahoma both going on the road to higher ranked teams in Alabama and Georgia. Flip-flop that. Texas at Georgia, Oklahoma at Alabama. So those are games that Texas and Oklahoma are likely going to be underdogs in. Every single one of those wins against those teams ends up moving you up a rung in the college football playoff rankings in the bye week. So Vandy, with they may not be playing this week, but an opportunity to get some wins in their college football playoff hopes. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 6641 says, the Memphis Tigers with two losses, not getting in. Yeah, sadly.
Unless they win the American, which is, it seems unlikely at this point, that they'll even be in the game.
There could
so
be
I don't know.
Chaos, but if a two-loss team gets into the American championship game, the American may not be the team getting the college football playoffs.
The
spot.
American is carnage right now. There are like five teams that are tied for first.
Yeah, and let's see. How does their schedule line up this week? Are there any big games
for Memphis? I think Memphis still has to play Navy. They play Navy at the end of the year. I think they have East Carolina in there as well.
Yeah, so you've got
8-2, so they have two games left.
You've got some big games this weekend. South Florida Navy, that's an elimination game in the American. Navy did get blown out by, or not blown out, I should say. They covered.
I guess they did cover.
But Navy hosting South Florida this weekend. Both those teams have one loss in the conference, so that's an elimination game.
USF traveling to cold weather.
Right, and that could be interesting. Byron Brown's been great for that team, though. Memphis, East Carolina. The Pirates, sneakily, still have just one loss in the conference. We'll see if they're able to keep it that way this week against the Tigers. And then Tulane, who I would say is probably the favorite You know, you could argue North Texas and South Florida are in there as well. They're hosting Florida Atlantic this weekend. So the American still with plenty to sort out for what could be, likely to be, the college football playoff spot out of the group of five. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. College football is the best, and we are into November. Lots to be sorted out. Vanderbilt with college football playoff hopes with two games left to go coming up after the off week. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday. We'll wrap up hour number one on the other side here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. 94.9 The Fan is your home for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Today, the Commodores take on Furman at 6 o'clock. Pre-game starts at 5:45. Excited for that one. Got a win in the opener in Paris a week ago today. Vandy taking on Furman tonight in the home opener. Michaela Blakes, again, I always like to plug it. If you haven't been out there to Memorial Gym to see Michaela Blakes play in person, plenty of opportunities starting tonight, 6 o'clock tip-off. And again, if you can't make it out there, listen in, 94.9 The Fan at 5:45. Wrapping up the hour here, and a couple more thoughts on Vanderbilt football. The Commodores are going to be doubted because of the logo on the side of their helmet. And I was already seeing a bunch of stuff midway through the game again on Saturday, just basically saying, oh, same old Vanderbilt. Then the Commodores roar back and get the win and stay alive. And even after the game, you're seeing the comments of, oh, well, it doesn't count. It was an overtime win against Auburn. All wins count the same. And I think you could tell Vanderbilt desperately needed this week off coming up. Like, they were getting tired. That was four straight games against tough opponents. LSU, Missouri, Texas, and Auburn in four straight weeks. Vandy, I think you could see the defense getting a little gassed out there at times. Wasn't tackling quite as well as they were early in the season. I think they need this week as a hard reset to get ready for Kentucky and Tennessee. And if you go 2-0, there's a pretty good chance that you're in the college football playoff.
Yeah, no, I think the bye week comes at a perfect time for this team because Kentucky, yeah, they're towards the bottom of the SEC, but the SEC, any given week, it just, unless it's Arkansas, even Arkansas has given people challenges this year.
Yeah.
I was in Knoxville when Arkansas took Tennessee to the rope. So the SEC week in and week out, there are no breaks. And even an Auburn team who just fired their coach, we see what they're capable of offensively.
Yeah.
So I think this bye week for Vanderbilt comes at the perfect time. You have Kentucky that's coming off of a big win over a rival. Kentucky, if they rope you into playing their style of football, they're a dangerous team.
So yes, they are.
I think Vanderbilt's bye week comes at the perfect time.
I mean, and Kentucky, if you had to pick a team or two that you'd want to face to stay alive in the college football playoff in the SEC, Kentucky would be one of them, right? Like, it's not like you're facing Georgia. It's not like you're facing Texas A&M or Ole Miss. But everybody's dangerous in the SEC. And we saw that this week, just taking Florida behind the woodshed. Kentucky does play this weekend. It's a home game against Tennessee Tech, as most of the SEC is getting their late season tune-up games in. Tennessee's playing New Mexico State this weekend. So lots of those over the next 2 weeks. But then Kentucky comes down to Nashville to take Vanderbilt. That is an afternoon kick from First Bank Stadium on the 22nd. Before we wrap up hour number one, did want to give a quick shout-out over on West End to Vanderbilt Soccer, who took home the SEC championship yesterday. Unbelievable game, if anybody out there caught it. They played LSU. LSU took a lead in the first half. Vandy was able to tie it up about halfway through the second half. They went all the way to penalty kicks, went 10 rounds in PKs before Vanderbilt finally was able to get the win. They got a couple of saves early on in penalties to stay alive, and then won in 10 rounds. First SEC championship for Vanderbilt soccer since 2020. The goal is to try and get Darren Ambrose on again tomorrow. I know you guys had him on while I was gone, but they have now won, I want to say, 8 straight matches, dating all the way back to September 26th. They haven't lost a match since September. So I did want to give a quick shout out to them on winning the SEC championship. The selection show is this afternoon for the tournament, so we'll find out where their NCAA tournament hopes lie later on. I believe 3 o'clock is when they're announcing the bracket.
Did I see they were ranked second in the country before?
They were second in the SEC.
Second in the SEC.
Let me take a look at the women's soccer.
I thought
rankings.
I saw something about them being second in the country. I'm like, huh.
So they're fourth in the RPI. They are eighth in the country based on the latest polls. But that was before the SEC tournament. So could be moving up. I think what I've seen is they're likely going to be a two seed.
That's what I saw. I saw the two next to their name. If they're playing at the tournament.
Right, they would have been. Yeah. Okay. Yes, that was because they were the two seed in the SEC tournament. But likely going to be a two seed on the two seed line in the NCAA tournament. Again, the bracket comes out later today. So I'm going to see if we can get Darren Ambrose on tomorrow to talk about his team, because it, really special stuff what they're doing. And Vanderbilt, in soccer especially, is one of those sports where if you get hot at the right time and head into the tournament, you can find yourself winning a national championship. It was a couple years ago, the national champions in men's and women's soccer was like Marshall and Santa Clara. So it's not like football where 9 times out of 10, the better team is going to end up winning. Sometimes it just takes a couple of bounces going your way. And right now, Vanderbilt is one of the best teams in the country. So they'll have an opportunity to go play for a national championship. And we're going to see if we can get Darren Ambrose on tomorrow as they get ready for the NCAA tournament.
Congratulations to them. Yeah. Hope they do well.
Winning an SEC championship is not easy in any sport. And they were able to get it done. There's a lot going right on West End for Vanderbilt sports right now. We will talk some college hoops later on in the show. Look at what Vandy men's basketball has done in their first two games this year. Hitting the century mark in both of their first two contests. 105 points against UCF on Saturday.
Also got to talk about Alabama and St. John's on Saturday. That was a thriller.
We will get to that as well. Lots of great college basketball. And I hate the crossover season allows a lot of these games to fall through the cracks. Like, especially Vanderbilt men's basketball on Saturday. The scheduling, you can't control it, but it worked out so horribly that Vandy men's basketball and Vanderbilt football, they got started at the exact same time. The exact same time. So it was disappointing that you couldn't really pay much attention to that, but Mark Byington's got them rolling two games into the season. 103 against Lipscomb, 105 against UCF.
Rolling. Crazy. Rolling. Yeah, Fraser, this was the day before you got back from Paris, but when we were filling in for you on Tuesday, we actually asked the question, when do you really start paying attention to college basketball?
Right.
Because now with the playoff lasting so long, I think the national championship is on January 19th. So people will probably start really paying attention to college basketball after the Super Bowl is over. And by that point, it's mid-February, and then March they start playing the conference tournaments, and then March Madness. So When do people I hate the crossover season.
Me
as well.
Too.
Because college basketball is awesome.
It's tough to give the flowers to college basketball that it deserves because it is so entertaining to watch. But there is so much going on throughout the fall with college football, NFL football. It's like you look up and it's February before you can even really start giving it your full and undivided attention. So really want to give a shout out to some of those games coming up later on in the show. But we will get into the Titans coming up next. They didn't play yesterday, but they were able to get some wins for their draft hopes to get to the number one overall pick. Pretty much everything that could have gone right for the Titans yesterday did. We'll get into it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game.